First comes the chicken, then the eggs. Mini flocks of backyard chickens are becoming more popular in rural and urban areas of Iowa, with more and more cities allowing chickens inside city limits. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking chickens. Bud Wood is the owner of McMurray Hatchery in Webster City. They ship about 2 million chicks around the country every year and offer over 100 different breeds. We'll get some expert input on what makes a good bird from poultry judge Bart Pals. And Ron Kane is University of Wisconsin Extension Poultry Specialist. He's also the answer man for Backyard Poultry Magazine. We'll get some advice from him. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. This time of year, you can find baby chicks for sale at the farm store, and thousands of little flocks of fluffy baby birds are being packed into cardboard boxes for trips through the mail. Backyard chickens are becoming more popular in Iowa, in rural and urban areas, and the number of Iowa cities allowing chickens within city limits is growing pretty fast. This hour, we're going to talk about backyard chickens and what it takes to have your own flock. We'll talk about the pleasures and the pitfalls, but first, we're going to start with the source of many of those chickens that are clucking away in backyards. McMurray Hatchery in Webster City ships more than 2 million chicks around the country every year and offers over 100 different breeds. Bud Wood is the owner. Hello, Bud.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for inviting me.
And when people hear that you offer over 100 different breeds of chickens, I'll bet a lot of people are saying, there are that many different breeds of chickens?
Actually, there's quite a few more than that. There's a book called The Standard of Perfection, which the judges use to judge chickens by. And I think there's a couple hundred breeds in that book, and we have about 100 of them.
How did you decide which breeds you would sell at McMurray Hatchery?
Well, McMurray Hatchery started back in 1917. Murray McMurray, who started the company, was a poultry enthusiast, showed at the local county fairs and stuff. And some of our breeds, our lines date all the way back to that point. So we've brought some of those lines forward. We've added lines by people's requests, all different kinds of things. We've added some production-type strains in the last few years because people wanted better egg layers.
What is your most popular breed right now?
Oh, we sell a lot of Rhode Island Reds. I mean, that's a good old-time breed that's been around for a long time. Buff Orpingtons are popular. Barred Rocks are popular. A lot of times it's whatever the picture on the front cover of the of our catalog is popular.
whenever that gets sold out, people are sent out, people say, oh, I want that one.
That's right. That's right.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about the many different breeds with a poultry judge in just a couple of minutes. So we'll talk about how they look different and many of the things that he looks for when he judges chicken shows. But what qualities are you looking for in the different breeds that you sell?
You know, people often ask me, what's the best breed for me? And that's strictly personal taste. I mean, you need to make a list of what you're looking for in a bird. Are you looking for a free-range bird? Are you looking for brown eggs, white eggs, green eggs? What are you looking for? Are you one of the characteristics of a free-range bird usually is that the lighter breeds seem to do better because they can move quicker and roost up in the trees and get away from predators. But most of our customers want a brown egg, and so, you know, I can direct them that way. Some of the better producers are kind of solid color chickens, and so people look for the rare and the exotics and the different feather patterns because they like the looks of them better than they do the production.
And let's talk about the variation in production, because I was looking through a book about chickens and looking at all the different breeds, and there seemed to be, there were this descriptors like docile birds, and it seemed to me that the higher producing birds were often described as being flighty. So let's talk about the variation as far as egg production. On the low end, how many eggs would a chicken lay, let's say, in a week?
Well, on the high end of that, like our red stars are a production bird, and they would lay an egg a day in their peak.
Okay.
They would average probably around the high 200s, maybe 300 eggs a year. So they're laying quite a few eggs. On the low end, some of the rare breeds, and part of the reason that they're rare is that they don't lay very well, and they may only lay 3 or 4 eggs a week.
And when you talk about at their peak, how long does a chicken live?
Well, that all depends.
If it doesn't get eaten, I guess I should say.
I have, the chickens are most productive in their first 2 years. And at about 12 months of age, they're going to go through a molt where they're going to lose their feathers. And at that point, they'll stop laying. And then once they get out of the molt and start laying again, they'll peak almost what they did the first year. They'll be a little less. And then the next year, they'll be a little less. And the next year, they'll just keep dropping down in their production. Most commercial egg houses probably keep a bird 2 years. They go through one molt, and then at the second molt, they would get rid of them.
But, of course, a lot of the people who are putting these backyard chickens in their yards, these become mm-hmm. family pets. They're not going to get eaten. How long can a chicken live?
Well, I had a lady write me a letter about Grandma Chicken, and Grandma Chicken was 14, I think, and she had raised all her grandchildren. They all collected eggs from underneath Grandma Chicken, and, you know, it was quite the family pet, and they were living in Michigan, and they moved to Florida, and Grandma Chicken went with them.
Wow. So they can live a long time.
They can.
And they can continue laying eggs throughout their lifetime, although not as many?
That's correct.
And you mentioned the molt. That shuts down egg production for a while. Mm-hmm. Also, I've read about broody chickens. What does it mean when a chicken is broody?
Broody chicken means that she wants to sit on eggs to hatch them out. And broody chickens, once they go broody and start sitting on a clutch of eggs, they'll stop laying at that point. So there's ways. Number one, if you collect your eggs all the time and you don't allow her to collect the clutch, then the chances of growing broody are less. The other thing that you can do for a broody chicken is if you have a cage or something where you can get her up off the floor and the air can come underneath, that cooling effect of the air coming underneath will stop her from being broody.
And if a chicken becomes broody, but then you convince her not to sit on those eggs, how long does it take for her to start producing eggs again?
Oh, it just depends. Some just a few days, some a few weeks. All the breeds are different, and each individual chicken's different, too.
And how about the seasons? Do they affect how productive your chickens are?
A chicken needs light to lay eggs, and about the perfect amount is 16 hours a day. So they'll continue to lay all year round and at peak production if you give them extra light in the winter so that they'd have a constant supply of 16 hours of light each day.
So this time of year must be a very exciting time of year at McMurray Hatchery. Tell me about your setup for having incubators, because you must have a lot of incubators and a lot of eggs.
We do. We have 36 incubators, and we set about 150,000 eggs each week. And we hatch on late Friday evening. And our niche in the market is if you want one of these and two of those and three of these, that's fine. You can mix and match any way you'd like to do that. And our average order is about 30 birds, and we're shipping them through the mail. And so early on Saturday morning, the birds arrive at the Minneapolis post office. Delta Airlines takes them to the next postal hub and then gives them back to the post office. On Sunday, they travel to the delivery post office, and Monday morning, they're ready to be picked up.
And I'm sure people who haven't actually done this, it probably sounds a little crazy to ship chicks through the mail. They're so small, and they seem so vulnerable. How do you keep them alive in a cardboard box for a couple of days?
Well, the chick, the embryo, develops from the white part of the egg. The yolk is a food sac, and there's an umbilical cord running to the chick. And that's what it lives on while it's in the egg and developing. Right before it hatches, it envelops what's left of that yolk into its abdomen. That gives the chick at least 3 days of food and water so that it's fine traveling all this time through the mail. In nature, what that would have done is allow the mother hen to sit on all of her eggs and wait for them all to hatch before she got up and took them to food and water. But because of modern incubation, we've cut that hatch window down to just hours instead of days. And so that's the way we're able to ship those through the mail.
Okay. And do you put food in the box?
We put a gelatin product in the box. It's kind of like gelatin Gatorade. It gives them something to peck at. It gives them some moisture. But really, they're pretty much okay by themselves.
And, of course, anybody who's seen a setup of baby chicks, you want to keep them warm. You need a heat lamp. How do you keep them warm enough when they're traveling like that?
Our boxes are specially designed. If you looked at one of our boxes, in the winter, we don't have any holes in the side of the box. The lid does have holes in it for some ventilation. And during the winter, we also put a thin piece of styrofoam on the bottom of the box. There is a straw pad. And then there's also an extra circle of cardboard to keep the chicks warm. Now, as the weather warms up, we start pulling out the cardboard circle, and then we'll start opening up more holes, and we'll do different things and adjust the number of birds in a box to make sure that those birds stay warm. And so they're pretty much giving body heat off to each other.
Okay, well, we're going to take a short break, and we will get back to talking about baby chick season and backyard chickens in a moment. With me right now is Bud Wood. He is the owner of McMurray Hatchery in Webster City. The hatchery ships more than 2 million chicks every year. We'll talk more about different breeds of birds. I'll talk with a licensed poultry judge with the American Poultry Association in just a few minutes. And then later on, we'll talk to the backyard poultry answer man as well. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
In the Surrey with the fringe on top. Watch that fringe and see how it flutters. When I drive them high-stepping strutters,
nosy pokes will peek through their shutters, and their eyes will pop. The wheels are yeller, the upholstery.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about backyard poultry. Chickens in the backyard have been getting more and more popular in rural areas of Iowa and urban areas of Iowa. Iowa City just passed an ordinance to allow backyard chickens. Des Moines has been doing it for several years. Ames also, Mount Vernon. There are a lot of places in Iowa where you can have backyard chickens. And people who have backyard chickens say a lot of great things about it. We've also recently heard some negative things in the news about backyard chickens, and we'll talk about that as the hour goes on as well. Right now with me is Bud Wood. He is the owner of McMurray Hatchery in Webster City, which ships more than 2 million chicks around the country every year. And Bud, one of the questions that a lot of people have is, of course, when people want backyard chickens, they want eggs. So they want hens. They don't want roosters. Roosters also tend to be noisy, so a lot of them aren't allowed in city limits. When you hatch all of these eggs, of course, probably half of them, I'm guessing, are roosters. How do you know which ones are going to grow up to be roosters and which ones are hens?
We have a group of sexers that travel from hatchery to hatchery, and they come in and sex our birds for us. And we guarantee a 90% sexing rate. They actually guaranteed us a 95% sexing rate. And from looking at the sexing they've done for our flocks and what people tell us, I bet we're closer to 98% accuracy on them.
And what happens to the little roosters?
We are a rare breed hatchery, and so our roosters are in demand, and we sell them.
Okay, and so they probably eventually end up being meat birds?
Some of them are fly tires. People raise them to tie fishing flies with the feathers. Some of them raise them because they want to have a you don't need a rooster to have eggs. A chicken's going to ovulate every day without eggs. Some people think that fertile eggs are better, and so they do want a rooster around. A rooster will protect the flock. He will watch out after his hens and protect them from predators. So there's all different reasons why some people have roosters.
Okay. And you're able to sell all of the roosters that you hatch?
We sell a great majority of them, yes.
All right. And many, many hatcheries end up having to dispose of their roosters.
That's correct.
When the chicks are born, when you order on your website, you can choose to have them vaccinated or you can choose to not have them vaccinated. What are they being vaccinated for?
One is Merrick's and the other one is coccidiosis. Merrick's is a disease that's in the wild all throughout the United States. It can cause lesions within the body, and it could be fatal to the birds if they get it. Coccidiosis is a intestinal parasite that could be lethal to the younger birds. The older birds can usually fight it off, but the younger birds need to be protected from it.
All right. And we will talk more about this later on as well, but I want to ask you about it right now. There has been a lot of publicity just in the last couple of days about salmonella problems among backyard chicken flocks. And a lot of the chickens that were infected with salmonella and spreading it around came from a hatchery in Ohio. But what do you do to make sure that your birds aren't going to spread salmonella?
There is a organization within the USDA called the National Poultry Improvement Plan, and they do have a salmonella monitoring protocol that we do follow and that most mail order hatcheries do follow. We test at the barn where the hens are. We test the eggs. We test the air inside the hatchery. We test the hatch baskets and all the way through. So we're continually testing for salmonella. There are like 25,000 strains, I think, of salmonella. There are a handful that are bad for humans. And so we check for all that stuff that we can. If we find any salmonellas, we would... Well, first of all, we vaccinate our hens for salmonella, and so that there should not be any coming through. But if we found something, we would go through antibiotic process and take care of it.
Okay. So have you had outbreaks of salmonella?
No, we have not.
All right. And we're going to bring Bart Pauls into the conversation now. Stay with us, Bud. Bud Wood is the owner of McMurray Hatchery in Webster City. And Bart Pauls of Mason City is an American Poultry Association licensed judge. Hello, Bart.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Bart, you judge purebred chickens all over North America. How many shows do you go to every year?
It depends upon the year. I try to keep it to one or two a month.
One or two a month. That's quite a lot.
Yep.
Are there pretty much chicken shows every weekend if you wanted to go all the time?
Yes, that's correct. Our season around here is like July to the first part of November, and then other parts of the country, California stuff, it's in January and February, and Florida's in February and March. So there's poultry shows usually going all the time.
How did you get to be a licensed poultry judge?
The American Poultry Association and the American Bantam Association both have a licensing procedure. Poultry and rabbits are the only ones that actually have a licensing procedure. You have to take an oral test and a written test to become one. You're not self-ordained.
All right. And what made you want to be a poultry judge?
Through the participation in 4-H.
What's a poultry show like?
It's very similar if you compare it to a dog show. There are seven classes of bantams and of large fowl. Bantams are the miniature counterpart of standard bred large fowl poultry. So large fowl birds can range from 5 pounds to 12 pounds, and bantams can weigh anywhere from 14 ounces to 40 ounces.
Do you judge individual birds? Is it like a dog show where somebody's taking an individual bird out?
The only difference between poultry shows and dog shows is the fact that the judge goes around and takes the bird rather than having the exhibitor show them.
Okay, so they're not walking around on leashes.
That's right.
Okay, and do you have to handle all the birds?
Yes.
When you handle a bird, what are you looking for?
Well, they're supposed to conform to a standard. There's supposed to be a certain tail angle, eye color, a certain weight, leg color, toenail color, plumage color, and condition is also taken into consideration.
And by condition, what do you mean?
Feather quality, usually. But there are two different aspects of judging poultry. One is purebred poultry, and one would be the commercial, both laying and market-type birds. So the American Poultry Association is the governing body for purebred poultry. And then the USDA actually has a grading manual for both laying and market-type birds.
Okay. And are you looking also at flocks of birds or just at the individuals?
Just at the individuals.
Do you have a favorite breed?
Nope. Poultry is just like the flowers of the animal kingdom. And we're very, very fortunate. People don't realize how fortunate we are to have a hatchery like McMurray Hatchery, so close. It's truly state-of-the-art. I think he may be the oldest and perhaps the largest in the nation. And we're just very fortunate. We always try to promote people to get their chicks from McMurray simply because we know that they'll be good, healthy birds.
And, you know, when we watch dog shows, sometimes we get behind the scenes where we find out how they make the dog's teeth so white and all of these different tricks. Are there some special tricks that people who show chickens like to employ to make them particularly shiny and beautiful?
Absolutely. Just about every bird will have been washed and groomed before they're exhibited. And they will come from all across the country to exhibit their birds.
Do you have all of these markers for each breed memorized, or do you have something that you carry with you as sort of a reference?
Yes. Bud made reference to the American Standard of Perfection. It's the poultry Bible, so to speak. It has all the varieties and breeds and all the classifications along with all the requirements.
Okay. And do you see a growing interest in showing chickens as this interest in backyard birds is increasing as well?
Absolutely. And it's more than just people wanting eggs or people wanting market-type birds. It's also people wanting to have a relationship with a live animal. It's something that the kids can take care of. For example, at the Iowa State Fair, they have a broiler contest, and all the participants will get the same number of or the same birds from the same place at the same time, and then they're exhibited, and then they're auctioned off at the market auction at the Iowa State Fair. That's where they sell, like, the champion 4-H beef and that kind of stuff. And those birds, that will be between a 5- and 6-week-long project from start to finish. And it's something that the youth can do. And those birds, if you take it per pound, will be by far the most expensive meat sold at the Iowa State Fair.
Do you see little kids doing this, too?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, it's something that they can do.
Yeah.
As opposed to a 1,200-pound steer.
I'm sure that's true. Well, Bart, thank you so much for telling us about it today.
Sure, thank you.
Bart Pauls of Mason City is an American Poultry Association licensed judge. Budge Wood is still with us. He is the owner of McMurray Hatchery in Webster City. And now Ron Kane is with us. He is the University of Wisconsin Extension Poultry Specialist. He also writes the Answer Man column for Backyard Poultry Magazine. Hello, Ron.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Sure.
And I also want to open up the phones as well. If you have questions for Bud and Ron as the hour goes on, please feel free to join us at 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also leave feedback on our Facebook page. And Ron, as more and more municipalities are saying, yes, it's okay to have backyard chickens within the city limits, I'm sure a lot more people are thinking, well, is this something I should do? How do you decide?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, and a lot of people have looked at it. I think a lot of people spend a lot of time on the internet, you know, checking things out. And it's kind of, I guess, like you would look at many other animals. Do you decide to have a dog or a cat, and you investigate costs and equipment you'd need and things. It's just that, you know, you can't compare to all your neighbors, I guess, because not everybody has chickens. But we've had some publications out on urban chickens, and certainly have some older ones on raising chickens that, you know, give you some idea of what's required.
How much space do you need?
Well, generally, most flocks in town are limited to, you know, four or five or maybe six chickens, and we usually say a bare minimum of 3 to 4 square feet per chicken, and that's really the minimum. Most people would like to probably push that to, you know, at least 6 to 8 square feet. So for 4 chickens, you know, 30 to 40 square feet is certainly pretty common.
What kind of a facility do you need to keep them?
Yeah, the biggest issue I see is that the facility is more important for keeping other things out than keeping the chickens in. And so, you know, a lot of things eat chicken. A lot of predators would like to get in there. And so that's usually the biggest issue. I suggest having a real solid coop at night, especially. During the day, you can maybe get away with a little bit of a less solid enclosure, but raccoons are certainly a problem. You know, depending on where you live, a lot of minks and weasels and things like that can be an issue. Coyotes and foxes, potentially.
How about neighborhood dogs?
Neighborhood dogs can be a problem, yeah. I do hear a lot of people having issues with that.
And what about cats?
Cats are usually not a problem except for baby chicks. So once the chickens get, you know, a few months of age on them, the cats usually aren't a problem. They might eat an egg now and then, so that can be a problem. But generally, they're not as big an issue.
And, of course, we already mentioned that most municipalities do not allow you to have adult roosters in town, and most of the noise associated with chickens comes from roosters. But are hens noisy?
They aren't silent. It's not unusual for them, especially in the morning, to cackle a bit after they've laid an egg, and so you might get a, you know, a brief time there. And they'll make some other sounds, but in general, I would say they're considerably quieter than a dog.
We were talking earlier about how productive different breeds of chickens are. How long does it take for you to go from that fluffy little yellow chick to a hen that's actually laying eggs?
Sure. That depends a bit on two things. The breed has some effect, and so some of the breeds that are more selected for egg production may start around 4 months. So, you know, we would say 18 weeks would be pretty typical. Some may go out to as much as 6 months, so more like 25, 26 weeks. So the breed has an effect. The other thing is the season of the year, or the day length, can have an effect. So if you start chicks, say, in late winter so that they are getting to that four-month age in the spring when the days are getting longer, that will actually cause them to come into production earlier, to start laying earlier. If you start them, you know, in midsummer, so that it's fall and the days are getting shorter, that will delay it a bit.
Okay, so the chicks that people might be buying now would start laying in July or August?
Yeah, probably so. And again, by that time, the days are typically getting a little bit shorter, so you'd probably, you know, you might add an extra week or two on.
We have this comment from Jennifer in Des Moines. She says, I have six baby chicks right now. We live near downtown Des Moines and adult chickens as well. They're a great break from my screen-heavy work life. Two things surprised me about backyard chickens. One, those things eat pretty much anything except citrus, onions, and red peppers so far. We don't feed them chicken either, obviously. And so we've got significantly fewer scraps that go down the disposal. And two, if you keep things fairly cleaned up, there is little smell to the operation at all. And you can buy chicken feed. Of course, you have to buy chicken feed. But what else do they eat?
Yeah, I would agree with her. They'll eat just about anything they can get a hold of. And, you know, chickens in the wild or running loose will certainly be omnivores. They're going to eat lots of insects. They'll eat mice if they can catch them. I've seen them eat, you know, small snakes and lizards and things. And so they certainly can. And I don't believe there's any issue with that. I think, you know, some people feel that they should feed an all-vegetarian diet to their chickens, but I don't think there's any reason that we have to be concerned about that.
All right, we're going to take a short break right now. We'll get back to our conversation about backyard poultry in just a moment. I'm talking right now with Ron Kane, who is University of Wisconsin Extension Poultry Specialist, and Bud Wood, who is the owner of McMurray Hatchery in Webster City. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
But she advocates dirty books.
Dirty books.
Chaucer, Rabelais, Balzac.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about backyard chickens. And with me is Bud Wood. He's the owner of McMurray Hatchery in Webster City, which ships more than 2 million chicks every year. And also Ron Kane, who is the University of Wisconsin Extension Poultry Specialist. He also writes the Answer Man column for Backyard Poultry Magazine. And they will answer your questions as well. Do you have backyard chicks? Are you considering getting backyard chickens? Do you have questions? 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we'd love to hear about your experiences as well. If you've had backyard chickens for a while, we'd love to hear about what you like about it. Maybe you live next door to somebody who has backyard chickens. We'd like to hear your opinions as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Bud, we have a question for you, and I think we'll find out a little bit about the different kinds of chickens and wild chickens versus domestic chickens here. But we heard from someone who says they would love to have prairie chickens. Do you sell those? This is Michael from Harper.
No, we do not sell prairie chickens. They're a wild bird. They really aren't related to chickens. Chickens were all developed from jungle fowl out of Southeast Asia. And Marco Polo brought them into Europe, and they've been developed from that point on. Prairie chickens is more of a wild bird, and we don't have any source for those at this point.
All right.
There was one thing I did want to comment on is the what chickens will eat. There's been some research done that free-range chickens who have access to grass and bugs and all those kind of things actually have higher omega-3s in their eggs, and that the eggs are more nutritious for you.
And I have just noticed on a purely anecdotal level that those eggs look different, too.
Oh, they do. I mean, if you look at a homegrown egg as opposed to one in the store, it's kind of a night and day difference. I kind of refer to it the difference between butter and margarine. There's one that's pale, kind of runny. It's the yolk doesn't stand up straight, where the homegrown egg, it's very firm. The yolk stands up, and it's almost an orange color. instead of yellow.
Yeah, and then the higher you are in the summer, the oranger it seems to be.
That's right.
And the, I think they taste different, too. What do you think?
I do, too. I think, like I say, I think it's a difference between butter and margarine.
Right. We may have a biased group here, but I'm going to go with that, too. Hey, Ron, I wanted to ask you, a lot of these people who get backyard chickens, of course, they'll get one or two, maybe up to four, but they're spending quite a bit of time with these individual chickens. What are they like as pets?
Sure. And I think I would say most of the people I have talked to and worked with after a year or so of having chickens, they really become pets as much as egg producers. As you said, each individual chicken, you know, can have some behaviors when you start working with them day after day. There are certainly breed differences. Some tend to be more flighty than others. But even chicken to chicken, there are some differences. So you, again, I think people I have talked to, they really become a pet just like your dog or your cat. And so, you know, a lot of people go into it thinking about having egg producers, but they do get pretty attached to them.
Well, I have a little backyard flock myself, and we started out with Buff Orpingtons, which were described to me as the golden retriever of chickens.
Sure.
And they are very docile, nice birds, but we got several, and they all looked exactly alike. And then I decided to put colored bands on their ankles, and when I had put the colored bands and, you know, the kids and I named them, I was so surprised by their different chickenalities. they're all so unique.
Yeah. Yeah, they really can be. And, you know, I think there hasn't been a lot of work done in that area because on a commercial basis, we certainly would look at a flock rather than individuals. But again, there's definitely some different behaviors.
I think that's true. I noticed that we used to have a small flock for our daughters, and there was definitely different chickens within that group that had different behaviors. And my wife would garden, and they'd follow her around the yard and, you know, peck after her and keep her company. They really do become pets.
Well, and you talk about them following around the yard, and I know that, of course, a lot of people in town have a confined space, so their chickens don't get to roam very much. But how do people with bigger space, how do they keep track of their chickens and get them into a safe coop every night?
One of the unique things about chickens is they like to roost. And so at night, you know, a few minutes before sundown, they'll just naturally go back to their coop and jump up on the roost. So when you're designing a coop, you always want to make sure you have plenty of roosting space, which could be branches, could be 2x4s or something, just for them to get up off the ground and roost on. And the majority of the time, they'll be in there and waiting for you to close the door for them at night.
So they're easy keepers in that way.
Yes.
Ron, with these chickens living quite a long time, becoming family pets in many ways, of course, we've talked about the danger of predation, which can seriously shorten their lives. But let's say they do not get eaten by a raccoon or a coyote or something like that, and they live quite a long time. Do you need to have a vet who can take care of them?
That's always an interesting question, and I think, you know, I would say in the past it's been very difficult to find a vet that really worked with chickens very much. And it's not a real common thing for most, even vet schools, to teach a whole lot of poultry. Because, again, commercially, we would work on a flock. You would, you know, the meat birds live for 6-7 weeks, the layers maybe 2 years, and then we would get rid of the flock. And so there hasn't been a lot of individual care. Now, as you mentioned, with people keeping their chickens longer, I think some veterinarians are finding that that is a market for them. I know here around Madison we have several veterinarians that are starting to do that, and people are willing to take them. You know, I think it's a mindset that is a little difficult when you can get a new chicken for very little money to go and pay for the extra. But I think, again, as people start to see them as pets like dogs and cats, there's a lot more willingness to take them. So we are seeing some veterinarians that are really working on poultry for the backyard flocks.
Chris is on the line at 866-780-9100. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Well, yeah, it's truly and all about being pets and stuff. You know, we had chickens as pets. We also had chickens that weren't pets, you know. They can get them and eat the eggs. We've got to get rid of them, and, you know. But it's like you said, you know, to pay a veterinarian to
You know, Chris, I'm sorry we're losing your line there, but one of the things that Chris mentioned before we got him on the line was that the chickens that they had growing up were great for keeping insects down. Is that another benefit of having chickens in the backyard, Ron?
Yes, that's definitely the case. And I think that's one that, especially if you, as you mentioned earlier, if you can have them free ranging, you know, if you've got them in a pen, it's going to be somewhat limited as to how many insects they can keep down. But there has actually been some research with guinea fowl, but I think it would translate to chickens as well, where they would keep ticks down. You know, they certainly keep other insects. They'll eat a lot of grasshoppers and things, too. So,
but they'll also eat your ornamental plants and things like that as well, right?
Yes, that can be an issue. I've done some talks to some garden groups, and it's usually I tell them, you know, chickens with the garden, but not in the garden.
How about the manure? What do you need to do to manage the manure?
Sure. I think the best situation is if you can compost it first. It does tend to be pretty high in nitrogen, pretty hot, you would say, and so composting it can help some. I know you mentioned salmonella earlier. The CDC has come out with some statements that if you're using poultry manure on food crops, they say to apply it 90 days before harvest for above ground crops and 120 days before for root crops. And so, you know, if you can put it on in the fall before spring for your garden, that probably works well. But it certainly does make a good manure for fertilizer.
All right. Mary is on the line from Danville. Hi, Mary.
Yes, I'm right here.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Well, I also am a lover of chickens. I have 14 of the Plymouth Barred Rock and 4 of the Buff Orringtons. But I have one little problem. When I got my chicks, I wanted all hens. And in the group, I accidentally got one rooster. So in the wintertime, I let him have free range, and he runs around. When I go to water my hens, though, he will, on occasion, try to attack me. How do I stop that? Or can I?
Ron?
Well, that's always a concern. And, you know, I think that goes back to, first of all, with the hatchery and getting roosters, they do very well, but they can't be 100% with their sexing. And so, you know, it's not unusual to get one rooster. As far as stopping them, it can be difficult. I guess probably the best thing I've heard of is that people will try to catch him when he comes at you, and you have to be careful that you don't get, you know, spurred. But if you can catch him up and hold him, a lot of times that will make you the more dominant flock member, if you will. You certainly don't want to kick at him, hit him, because that tends to just stimulate that fighting instinct more. And so I think from what I've heard, again, a lot of people will try to catch him up. I guess I would say, you know, especially if you have kids around, sometimes it's not worth having a rooster like that. And so you may want to consider relocating him or some other method. But sometimes that will work to handle him. You know, it depends a little bit on how feisty he is, and how much you want to put up with.
Yeah, I plan on locking him up, you know, when the weather gets warm, because we have grandchildren. I won't allow that. But the other comment I would like to make is, somebody told me, well, I have some people that laugh at me. I have a bench, a park bench, by my hen house. And at times when I want some distraction or some relaxation, I will actually go out there and watch my hens. And they say they are about as calming as watching an aquarium with fish. And I believe it. They are such characters, especially when one finds a worm and the others go running after them. They're really a joy to have around. I will always have chickens.
Oh, Mary, thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
So, Bud, you don't have a flock at your house anymore?
No, my daughters kind of outgrew it, and so we don't have any chickens at this point. But I do have about 35,000 on farms around me.
Do you still get a charge out of baby chick season?
I do. You know, every week I go back and during the hatch, and I'm just amazed at what God has given us.
Do you have chickens, Ron?
I don't have myself. We have some here at the lab, so I get my chicken fix, most days. But I work a fair amount with commercial operations also, and so from a biosecurity standpoint, it's best if I don't have my own flock. But
right. Are there other things we need to worry about in addition to salmonella? I know that some people are concerned about bird flu in backyard chickens.
Yeah, well, fortunately, the type of bird flu that affects humans, or at least the one that's been in Asia, has not come to the United States, and we cross our fingers that it doesn't get here. Most of the flu types that chickens get does not affect humans directly. And so that's been helpful for us. And I again, hopefully that won't happen. I think most people with a small flock, if they can keep them fairly isolated from others, I think the risk is manageable. There's always a concern of wild birds, but I guess for right now, I don't think it's a huge issue.
Well, and we don't have time to get back to the phones, but Darlene and Tiffin wanted to know, during the winter months, do you need to do something to keep them warm? Do you need an extra source of heat in this winter particularly?
Yeah, and it's always a difficult question for me because I can't really pinpoint a temperature that you have to have. I know a lot of people raise their chickens without heat. In a bigger flock, it works well because they'll produce enough body heat by themselves. If you only have, less than 10 chickens, I think most people provide some sort of heat for them. Keeping the water thawed is really a big thing. So if you can have a water heater or a light bulb over the water so you can keep that thawed, that helps a lot. Giving them extra feed so that they can keep themselves warm is good. I think they can handle a lot of cold, so I wouldn't worry about keeping it warm, but if you can take the edge off, that's good. Certainly you don't want to give up ventilation, though. You have to get some fresh air in there and get rid of some moisture, so that's always a trade-off.
All right. Well, Ron, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Sure.
Ron Kane is University of Wisconsin Extension Poultry Specialist. He also writes the Answer Man column for Backyard Poultry Magazine. And Bud Wood, thank you so much.
Thank you, Charity. It was a pleasure.
Bud Wood is the owner of McMurray Hatchery in Webster City. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Technical support today from Jason Burns. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, I'll talk with blogger and author Alyssa Altman. Her most recent book is called Poor Man's Feast. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.
What I'm talking about that funky chicken.